Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. I hope this decade is going as swimmingly for you as it is for Arsenal Football Club. Yet to lose a game, yet to even concede a goal, yet to play more than one game. But hey, fuck it. Start as you mean to go on, I say. And if you start with a 2-0 win over Manchester United, that's a good way to get yourself going. Of course, if this was the start of a season, we might be in better shape. It's not. It's just the start of a new year and a new decade. We're midway through a season, which, you know, is kind of in the toilet. But we take our enjoyment where we can get it these days. And that was thoroughly enjoyable stuff against Manchester United. So we are going to talk about that game. We're going to talk about the some of the performances, some of the individuals, the impact of Mikel Arteta on this team, this club, this fan base has been phenomenal in just a couple of weeks. And, you know, we're feeling better about things. We've gone from feeling some sort of festering despair, and now it's a kind of Lego-haired optimism. If only there were a song that summed that up perfectly. If only. Everything is awesome. People out there who haven't seen the Lego movie will, of course, be completely blind to that reference. But there you go. A little bit later on, I am going to be chatting to Charles Watts of Goal about Mikel Arteta, about some of the things that are going on around the training ground. Also looking ahead to the FA Cup game against Leeds. Some updates from Mikel Arteta. He had his press conference today, Thursday. So I'll be talking to Charles as soon as he's out of that. But first up, to discuss the 2-0 win over Manchester United, the feel-good factor that has returned to the Emirates, and lots more, it is Andrew Allen. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. Let me ask you something. As a regular match-going fan, season ticket holder, who has sat through a period in Arsenal's history which has been, let me just say diplomatically, trying.
Yeah.
What did it feel like to win a Premier League game at home for the first time since October the 6th?
Well, I mean, for me, it goes back to September the 22nd because I was away for the Bournemouth game.
Wow.
I was following that. So the last time I saw us win in the league was that Villa comeback. And I remember leaving the stadium that day pretty frustrated because obviously we'd made life very difficult for ourselves. So honestly, it's been so difficult the last few months trying to, you know, working your way to the stadium, trying to fill yourself with hope. Obviously, the game against Chelsea was very frustrating. You could see all the good things and still somehow we managed to undo them at the end. But this was different. It was like we were more prepared on every single level. It was fantastic.
Did you sense a change in mood around the stadium over the last week or so? Obviously, as you mentioned, Chelsea didn't go as well as we would have liked. It was going well, and then it just took a sharp turn to the right in the final stages of the game. But there were very obvious encouraging signs from the performance, particularly in the first half, and those were evident again against Manchester United. An early goal, Arsenal dominating and in control. But just in terms of the mood, it's going to take a while, I think, to sort of shake off some of the things that that have plagued us and haunted us over the last little while. But it seems to me, anyway, from a distance, and obviously talking to people online, etc., that there is a very definite shift in mindset that people are seeing things here that they haven't seen for a long time, and those are enough to provide encouragement and belief.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to say, I think the atmosphere at both games has actually been very, very supportive. So the Chelsea game, I really felt like people were really up for it, a kind of post-Christmas kind of let's go. Obviously, that died off a bit in the second half as Chelsea started to dominate. But then yesterday, you kind of had this weird mix where I think some people were probably quite hungover, but the stadium was very full. And then there were also loads of people who'd sort of started a real early drinking session, and it was quite, you know, it was quite raucous. I felt like everybody's desperate to try and support the players through this. There's an understanding that this is going to be a journey, that there needs to be some patience. I mean, I think a good example perhaps is like, you know, Granit Xhaka's reintegration. I mean, there was no suggestion, even when he made the odd mistake last night, that people were going to get on his back. And I think that's really important. By and large, I think the crowd was incredibly supportive. That creates a better atmosphere. It makes you want to be in the stadium, makes you want to stay in the stadium longer. The stands were pretty much full yesterday. I recognise, obviously, it's a big game, but they were full also right up until the very end. It just, all of it just makes you sort of think, okay, you know, maybe there is something to all this. Okay, this season's going to be difficult. We've got a bit of a rescue act on our hands. We might, you know, we've got a couple of cup competitions coming up. There's reason to hope there. It's hard at the moment to say that top four is completely out of the question because all the other teams keep dropping points as well. I think that's very unlikely, but yeah. It's the start of something.
I love that. Like, we've won one game in 15 and you're like, maybe top four is not quite out of the equation. There's nothing like the
optimism. Honestly, no, I agree. At the table. It's crazy.
I know, I agree. It is crazy, and a few wins will send us rocketing up the table, I'm sure, but it is just the fundamental hope and belief and optimism that we have to have as football fans, which makes you go, well, maybe if everything just comes together. I think there's something to be said for the change in mood that we could even consider having that conversation or not completely ruling it out. And I think there's something very interesting about the fact that, you know, Arteta has understood that the connection between the fans and the team and maybe even sections of the club itself has been, if not broken, certainly damaged. And he's been out to repair that from the very start. I think the fact that he's been a player quite recently and been a player at Arsenal quite recently, you know, also a player at a time when things were contentious, you know, with the late stages of the Arsene Wenger era. You know, he went through periods where fans were unhappy and there was a bit of friction, you might say, between the relationship between fans and the club. But I love what he said to the players. You know, he's aware that they have to be in control or take control of repairing that relationship, and he said to them, it's up to you, your body language and behavior. If you're able to transmit to them, they'll buy into it. If it's negative, it's a negative reaction from the fans. If it's positive, it's a positive reaction, and they're willing to help you. They're here to support you. And it goes back to, you know, it's like that cliche about, you know, somebody who may not be the greatest player of all time, the most skillful player, but if they put in the hard work, if they put in the effort and the running, fans will connect with that. And I think that's what he's asking from these players, you know, on a very fundamental level, is just to work hard so that fans will get on board with you, so that the job of then implementing the tactical elements of what he's doing become easier because players have got fans on side.
Absolutely. I mean, I think everything has started to, I think they're doing everything they can to kind of give off good vibes, as it were. I mean, I noticed very quickly that the players now have started doing team huddles before the game. Just little things like that. They're kind of like visual signs to the crowd that the players are all in it together, right? On social media, you get the feeling the players are interacting with more positivity towards one another, particularly after Bern Leno made his mistake. There was a lot of players kind of, when he made a post on Twitter or something, kind of being straight in there saying, don't worry about it. Definitely the body language thing, I think, is something that Arteta's tried to talk about to the players. And it's obvious in the stadium. I mean, Arsene Wenger used to always talk about it. You know, in England, sometimes a player, when he makes a tackle, he'll get a roar like there's a goal in another country. You know, and that was very obvious, the way that Aubameyang's racing into challenges and the crowd are roaring him on, clapping him. You know, Lacazette, who's had some pretty poor games recently, even he's kind of, you know, you get the crowd on side by just doing some of the simple things, which is showing effort, showing a desire to actually, you know, help your teammates. All of that is really good. And that, I mean, look, we temper all of that by saying a long, long way to go. There's still so much they need to improve upon. That was, again, yesterday, kind of 45 minutes of half-decent football, but there's another 45 minutes where we were very much under the cosh. So it's positive, real, you know, I feel like the seeds have been sprinkled. We just got to keep watering them now.
I'm not going to take issue with you saying that we were under the cosh, because I think United did have more of the ball. But very similarly to the Chelsea game, it just felt a little more secure. Like, we've been under the cosh with Unai Emery in games, and, you know, we think to that Watford game, the away game, where that is the very definition of under the cosh. We were under about 15 coshes at that point, the amount of chances that Watford had. But, you know, again, yesterday, there wasn't a huge amount of danger from Manchester United. There wasn't really a huge amount of danger from Chelsea. Even though it went wrong at the end, and in some ways, of course, we were masters of our own downfall because of the Leno mistake and because of the way that the second goal played out. So, you know, there's something to be said for the fact that even if we're not able to maintain this level of physicality, which allows us to dominate the way we did against Chelsea in the first half, against United in the first half, there's something more secure about the organization, about the setup and everything else, that means that if you do drop off, you're not immediately in full-on panic mode.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I honestly felt like in the 15 minutes after halftime yesterday, the players had been briefed that United were going to come at us strong. And actually, the best thing we could do was sit a little bit deeper, try and preserve some of our energy, because we obviously went, you know, full tilt against Chelsea last week. I felt like they were kind of almost playing a little bit within themselves, just making sure that they, you know, let Manchester United have the ball to a certain extent, but make sure that they did so with all of our players behind it, as it were. So, we looked far more organised. We had a better shape. We were far more compact. We were, you know, I think it was better game management, really.
Mm, yeah. It is one of the things that Arteta has brought in is it three games now?
Three games.
So, yeah, very, very early days. But structurally, this team looks so different, doesn't it? That the shape of it in possession and out of possession is really impressive. And that clarity of...
I mean...
Go on.
I was going to say, I mean, absolutely. Just the distances between the players, both in and out of possession, is so noticeable. I mean, I'm in quite a lucky position where I sit behind the goal in an upper tier. And when you look down... It became so obvious under Emery that there were huge gaping gaps. Like, you know, players were having to make 35, 40-yard passes just to try and find a player in front of them. Now you're seeing the gaps down to 10, 15 yards. It's a lot more manageable. You know, you can pop the ball around a little bit quicker. You don't need to take a touch because you trust yourself to make the pass first time. All of that is just, it's so important. But, they just got to keep doing it now.
Yeah, they do. I've completely forgotten what I was going to ask you there. Because I'm not blaming your interruption here, by the way. And I'm just talking here to see if I can remember what it was that I was going to say. Yes, I remember now. Socrates and David Luiz on BT Sport talking about how I think there was something pointed that both of them said. One was Socrates saying the fun is back. And of course, it's not about fun, but, you know, I think we know what he means. Like going to your job, if it's a chore, it's not enjoyable for anybody. And it feels like perhaps that was the case previously. But also David Luiz saying, I believe in his football philosophy, which suggests to me that he did not in any way believe in whatever Unai Emery's football philosophy was. And the players appear to be on board with what Arteta is asking of them, because they've played three games in 6 days, basically. They've put in a huge amount of physical effort. It's difficult. I know they're professional athletes, but we have to be realistic. You know, to play that much football in such a short space of time is not easy. And you can't do what we did without understanding what it is that the manager wants from you from a tactical level, on an organizational level and everything else. So to have that kind of an impact that quickly suggests that he has come in and really connected with this group of players. And it also suggests to me that they want to be connected with. They've been looking for something. Something has been really missing from the way that they've been doing their jobs, the way that they've been training, and Arteta has found what that is.
I think there's a certainty about Arteta, which actually I found quite surprising, and it hit me straight from that first press conference when he came in and said, this is what I'm here to do, this is how I'm going to do it, this is, you know, why I believe I'm going to succeed. And I think the moment you can get those ideas across very succinctly and clearly, I mean, it's obviously not just going to be the fans who get it. I mean, the players are the ones who every day have to, you know, listen to him and work under him. It must have been a huge kind of, oh, crap, okay, now I realise what we've been missing for the last few months. Because as lovely a man as Emery was, I think it was pretty clear that him trying to get his ideas across, even though he may have got the ideas across eventually, it wasn't necessarily clear, it wasn't necessarily efficiently done. But I mean, when Socrates starts talking about the fun is back, I suspect there's obviously some morale stuff going on there. But I also suspect that we're not necessarily spending 3-4 hours a day sitting in front of video footage analysing games in the same way that Emery perhaps did. I know that the games are becoming thick and fast, so I thought it was really interesting when Luis was basically suggesting that, you know, it's better to sleep happy on 4 hours than to, you know, get 8 hours of sleep when you're unhappy, as it were. They're gonna be happy to work when they're winning, because, you know, you're part of something, you feel it. I mean, you only have to look at the number of games that Liverpool have played in December all around the world, basically, and every win they just look stronger and stronger. They don't look like a team who's tiring because they've got a busy schedule. They look like a team who's building momentum. So, I mean, look, there's plenty of teams that we can look at and go, look what they do, look how they do it. And I think maybe we are benefiting a little bit from Arteta having that certainty from a team last year who won 3 domestic honours in City. I mean, he was a bit of an unknown quantity, especially for some of the guys who didn't have him around as a player himself. So I can imagine the people like Aubameyang, who didn't really know much about Arteta, kind of wondering what he was on about. And it definitely felt like there were some weird briefings going on. I mean, the stuff like his brother coming out on social media and saying, oh, he's just like Freddie and inexperienced and stuff. But they do seem to have kind of turned it around quite quickly. They seem to have really gone for the buying into his ideas.
There are individuals in this team who have benefited significantly from Arteta's arrival. And I know that we're looking at players perhaps like Luis, Socrates, Granit Xhaka, as guys who didn't really perform as well as they should have. And again, maybe it's all down to Emery. Maybe you can put some of the blame on the players themselves. But I do think one guy, well, there's a couple of guys, but I want to just ask you about Lucas Torreira. I'm sitting here now just thinking about how Unai Emery used him, how he struggled to find an effective place in the team for him, despite Torreira showing when he first arrived that his best position was deep in midfield. Arteta's moved him back there. We're now seeing a rejuvenation from Torreira in terms of his performances, what he's producing on the pitch. It seems like it would have been a simple thing for Emery to do, to play him in his best position, but he, for some reason, didn't want to do that, maybe because he didn't believe in his physical attributes in that role. But, you know, when we look at this squad and we think about who is going to be a key component of Arteta's team, he really stands out for me.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, the more I kind of look back on those quotes where Emery was saying that he preferred to play Torreira as a sort of more advanced player, the more I'm just baffled by it, really. I mean, if the player himself is so adamant that he's not that type of player, it just seems so strange. But, I mean, yeah, it's simple things, right? Talk to the players, ask them what position they best fancy, then see if it works for you and your setup. I mean, I don't understand how you could take a player like Torreira, who performed so well in that position in so many games last season, and then decide that he's not the right fit for that. I recognise that Emery's favourite was very much Matteo Guendouzi. It felt like maybe Guendouzi was a bit more his man, despite the fact the two of them arrived at the same time. And maybe, you know, Matteo's sort of tired a little bit he may well have a future if Xhaka's going to stick around. But it's been a revelation watching Torreira, because what you need is someone who's willing to snap into challenges, sort of retrieve the ball, make those quick turnarounds, start a counter-attack. It's everything that we've been missing in midfield. It's great to see him benefiting. I mean, I think he's going to have we need someone else who can do that role behind him, because he's going to be absolutely knackered in a few weeks' time if we're asking him to do it week in, week out. So we need to find and train up somebody inside the squad, I guess, who can also do that same role. I don't know whether, you know, the likes of Joe Willock are necessarily the right person. Maybe we'll go and look in the transfer market for someone. But it's vitally important.
Mm. So let's talk a little bit about Nicolas Pepe, who scored the opening goal against Manchester United. He was given a start. It was his first start, I think, since we played Man City. I think he started that game. He did start that game and didn't start any of the subsequent games. And there were comments, of course, from Arteta about how he has to have confidence in a player to be, you know, willing to give him a start, and suggestions that perhaps in training he needed to work hard. And I think those things are probably true. I think there's a real player in Pepe, and I'm kind of confident that Arteta is going to get the best out of him, because not only did he give him a start and he was involved in both the goals, he obviously scored the first one, he took the corner for the second. You know, there were some really nice moments from him in the first half, positive signs, encouraging signs about what he can bring to the team. But I thought quite notably, in the early stages of the second half, maybe the focus wasn't quite there. The non-negotiables that Arteta talks about weren't evident in his performance. And there was no sort of, look, somebody have a word with him and tell him to book up. It was like, you're off. I feel like that kind of approach is something that Pepe will hopefully benefit from. He didn't look particularly happy to be taken off. And that's good. I guess you don't want players to be happy, but I think this kind of no-nonsense approach, you know, demanding more from him, is the way to get the most out of him.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were maybe two. I mean, I saw a stat that seemed to suggest he had a 100% pass completion rate or something last night, which was interesting, because at the time in the second half, as you say, those first 10, 15 minutes, he definitely gave the ball away a couple of times, whether he was attempting to dribble or somehow else. But I noticed that Arteta, from my position, the second time the ball was turned over or he didn't quite do something right, he really was like, you know, he sort of had a swing at thin air and then immediately called over to the subs to sort of to get Nelson ready. So it was that kind of ruthless streak. Like, I think he had a feeling that he was tiring and that was it. He'd made his mind up and he was going to get him off and replace him, make sure that Maitland-Niles was a bit better covered. I think Pepe, it's fair to say, is going to be a long learning curve for him. I mean, he's obviously got skill on the ball. He is very good at taking players on, but he's also the type of player, it kind of reminds me a bit of Arshavin, who he'll try the hard thing kind of more often than not. And as a consequence of that, the chances are you're not always going to pull it off. And because he's trying that in areas of the pitch when maybe we're trying to counter, it can easily turn into a turnover, which then creates, you know, gaps at, you know, in front of our defence, which causes us problems. So we're going to have to manage him. But I do have positive vibes about him. I mean, even in a relatively disappointing start to his life, he has scored 5 goals now. He has had a role in several assists. We just need to kind of piece it all together so that we get this final player. But we've seen it with other players. You know, it took Robert Pires a season really to start getting up to speed in England. And it's not unusual, let's say, for a foreign player to come in, especially when you're coming in from a league like France, which is a little bit below where we are in terms of pace and physicality. But he'll get there. I do believe it. He will get there. I mean, someone was saying recently that, you know, Son had a pretty disappointing first season for Spurs. And I kind of see similarities, because they're both kind of pacey players who operate predominantly on the wing. And I think that, you know, if we can get Pepe a bit stronger, he'll be much better ready to cope with 90 minutes. I still don't think you're necessarily going to get like a proper tracking back all of the time type of player. He may be a little bit of a luxury, but we'll see if Arteta stands for that in the long term, because obviously he turned other players at City like Sane and Sterling into guys who could really do a full 90 minutes up and down a wing and beyond.
Yes, and I think that is what he's going to be demanding of the players. You know, that ability, even if you don't play 90 minutes, you've got to be able to do it, you know, if necessary. Yeah, so Ainsley Maitland-Niles at right back.
Yeah.
A position he says he doesn't want to play in, or, you know, he said in the past that he did not want to play in. And when you think about where he might fit into the team elsewhere, you're saying to yourself, come on, man. You know, you have a real chance here. With injury to Hector Bellerin, who's still out, you know, and is going to take some time to come back to his best following a cruciate injury. I look at him and I look at Bukayo Saka. I look at Joe Willock, who I know has had, you know, a couple of recent cameos, which maybe haven't been quite as impressive as some of his other performances. And I look at these young guys in the squad, Martinelli, Emile Smith Rowe, who might go out on loan, I think, in January. I think James Benge was reporting that he is he's going to leave on loan, depending how full our squad is, I guess. But these kids, we've talked about, you know, Socrates, Luiz, Xhaka, Torreira receiving a bit of a boost, experienced players. Mesut Ozil, another one who, you know, has rediscovered some form in the system that Arteta is playing. But when we look at these young players, it feels to me like they're kind of perfect for Arteta, for what he wants to do, in that he can mold them at this sort of nascent stage in their career to being what he wants them to be within the system that he wants to play. Like, we have an 18-year-old winger playing really well at left back in Bukayo Saka.
Yeah.
You know, I know Maitland-Niles has played the majority of his football for Arsenal at right back, and I think we might have to start considering that's what he is now. You know, he's not going to be a winger, I don't think, unless, you know, Arteta sees something in him when he's got another right back available to him. But it is a chance for these young players, isn't it? Because they've got a clean slate, a fresh start, a young coach who I think will connect with them really quite easily.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, Maitland-Niles, as you were saying, I mean, he's never really considered himself a right back, but then he's never really played in central midfield for us, has he? I mean, he's had a couple of goes on the wing. I look at him and I think there shouldn't be any snobbishness, let's say, about the position you play when you look at how fullbacks influence the game for other clubs. I mean, you only have to look at Liverpool, for example, and Robertson and Alexander-Arnold and the way that they are influencing things for Liverpool. And you think, well, actually, if Ainsley Maitland-Niles wants to make it at Arsenal, why not do it from fullback, where the game has changed so much that a fullback can basically be the playmaker?
He can be the winger that Ainsley Maitland-Niles says that he wants to be.
Exactly. I thought what was really interesting is when you look at Saka and the way that he performed against Liège from that left-back position, that, you know, there he was. He scored a goal. He created another. There was a player influencing the game from a fullback position. I know a bit's been written about the fact that we're playing with a slightly more inverted fullback, so that someone like Maitland-Niles and Kolasinac on the left yesterday kind of step inside a bit more to midfield to offer a bit more of a passing option for, you know, Xhaka and Torreira and Ozil and all the rest of it. So I think the way that we play will very much influence the way that they learn the role, and it will be easier to learn that role in a team which is more compact, because you'll be able to do a bit more forward play. You won't always be stuck tracking back, racing after wingers who've, you know, raced past you, as we were doing under Emery. So yeah, the structure will help the players learn the role. It's interesting because I don't think players should be so pigeonholed that they think, oh, I can only play one position. I mean, we need players who can play in several positions, because you look at what happens to a team over the course of a season, an injury strike, and ultimately everybody's sort of left filling holes all the time. That's just part of the modern game. It's not unusual. I mean, teams in Italy used to do it back in the 90s. They used to have loads of players who were kind of, you know, Grimaldi-like. You know, they could go and fill in wherever they were asked. And I think that's something we've kind of missed in recent years. We've had so many players who are so defined by certain roles that they can play that yeah, I just think they need to be a bit more flexible. And I think if you're flexible in a winning team, you're just going to be happy to be on the pitch. I think James Milner's a great example of that. Someone was talking recently about how many positions he's played for City and Liverpool over the course of the last 5 years. And obviously he's a player who's hugely decorated now. European titles, domestic titles, all of it. And that's just hard work. You do the basics well and you'll get picked wherever there's a gap.
Yeah, it is. The versatility thing used to be seen as maybe an impediment to getting first team football, or to, you know, to being a player who, you think about Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who never really nailed down a position at Arsenal. Mm. And we were always going, well, where is he going to play? What's his final position going to be? Is it going to be a winger? Is it going to be, you know, wing back? I don't think that was anywhere he really particularly excelled. You know, there were moments where we saw him play very well in central midfield, but Arsene Wenger very rarely used him there, not unless he had to. And now the versatility that you're talking about, it feels like it's a key component for most squads. So, go on.
I was just going to say, I mean, it's particularly important for us to have versatile players at the moment while we basically go through what I expect to be something of a squad rebuild. Over the course of the next couple of windows, right? I mean, I expect to see players leave. And in the meantime, we may not always find players up to speed, or they may not always be kind of quite right for the system. We'll have to adapt them and develop them and stuff. And in the meantime, all the players that we do have need to be as good as they can be in the roles that they're asked to do. All I was going to say on that.
No, that's fair enough. So, you know, just to sort of bring things back down to earth, and I don't want to sort of put a dampener on anything at all, but are we jumping the gun at all here when it comes to Mikel Arteta? You know, I think we've been careful to sort of caveat everything by saying it's early days, and it's clear to me that there's been a lot to like about what he's done in a short space of time, both how the team has performed, how he's communicated with the players and communicated with the fans and all those things. But, you know, we've been a starving man in the desert, and somebody has just handed us a cheese sandwich that's been sitting out in the sun for 3 days. Anything you eat when you're starving tastes great. Do we need to be a little more constrained in the way we talk about stuff like this? Or, you know, is it okay when things have been bad for a while to sort of really enjoy what's been good, even if what's been good is quite minuscule in the grand scheme of things?
Well, I think what we need to do is we need to basically assess what our aims are for the rest of the season, and then how those aims are transferred to next season. And when I look at where we were a few months ago, what I wanted to see was Arsenal playing better football. I wanted to see our players playing to their potential, and then obviously you layer onto that things like qualification for the Champions League, winning silverware. Now, we've got two trophies that we could potentially win, the FA Cup and the Europa League, and both of those are going to be starting up pretty soon. I think looking to the rest of the season, though, I mean, this is really about developing things for next year. I know that we're desperate to qualify for the Champions League. That, I think, is going to be very, very difficult, especially when you consider that a cup competition, it's anything can go for and against you when it comes to the draw at certain times and injuries and all the rest of it. But what I want to see is that for the rest of this season, we basically go on a bit of a run, we build some momentum, we start to play better football. I want to see the players looking and feeling happier on the pitch, and I want to look forward to going to Arsenal every week. If he can do that and it feels like we're making progress in that direction, then I'm going to be happy as a supporter, and I'm sure lots of other people will be as well. But it's interesting. He's not really spoken, or Arteta hasn't really spoken about what his aims are in the short term, aside from really just trying to nail down some of the basics and get his philosophy across. He's certainly not talked about trying to qualify for the Champions League or anything like that. I think to a certain extent, the Football Executive Committee are probably sort of taken that pressure off him a little bit and said, okay, we know where we are now. We just need you to do your best. And let's see how we go over the next couple of months and maybe reassess going into the spring.
Yeah. It's sort of setting expectation levels, isn't it? Because when Emery came in, the expectation was get back into the Champions League. That was the expectation in his first season because, you know, it was something we nearly achieved. We finished fifth and got to the Europa League final, which would have given us that. So that was the expectation level. And that's what the expectation was going into this season as well. You know, when you break your transfer record, you bring in a player like Pepe, you know, it's a sign that you're spending money to make up the difference between where you ended last season and, you know, going into this new season. So the expectation level for Emery was up there. That's what it was. And you know, the more he fell below that expectation level, the more frustrated people became with it and the less tolerant they were of what he was producing with the players that he had. Now, if the expectation level is much lower than that, I think it does have an effect on sort of the, I don't want to speak about the fan base as one giant collective, but as the overall psyche, you know, if you're not really expecting to finish in the top four, there is a bit more leeway. There's a bit more forgiveness. There's a bit more understanding about the task and the scale of the job that he has at hand.
Yeah, I mean, look, if there's one thing I really want, aside from us playing better football, is actually to look more competitive in those games that, let's say, I was almost expecting us to lose before we even kicked off. So that means being able to go away to some of the big teams and make them scratch their head a little bit and figure out how they might try and beat us. I mean, to be honest, I set that out as an aim when Emery took over. I said, look, if we can get to a situation where we're going away to City and Liverpool and they're thinking, OK, this is going to be a tough game, that would be great. We never got there, though. I still feel like that's something that Arteta should be working on a lot towards next season, when I think really he, you know, the pressure starts for him. But being competitive and trying to win football games and instilling a sense of hope in fans that, you know, this might go our way. You know, we don't just have to sort of mark it down as a, well, we're not going to win today kind of vibe, because that's really depressing.
It is. It is. That's what's been most depressing about the last few months, really, has been this idea that regardless of who you're playing, it's not that you have a chance to win, it's that it's quite likely you won't win. So, yeah, look, that turning around in and of itself is a really positive thing. Right, we better leave it there. Andrew, thank you, as always, for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed to Andrew. You can find him on Twitter at @AAllensport, doing stuff on Arsblog News. And he is the co-host of the Left Field podcast, which is a left field look at sporty stuff rather than being a tribute to the British electronic music group who released the album Leftism, which is potentially one of the greatest albums of all time. Maybe they can pivot to left field if left field sports analysis doesn't work. You can find them on Twitter at @leftfield_pod. So give them a listen if you're looking for more pods in your life. And who isn't? Let's be honest.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay then, lots going on from a footballing point of view. Arsenal have got Leeds United in the FA Cup on Monday night, and ahead of that game, Mikel Arteta met the press, and we now meet one of those press. From goal, it's Charles Watts. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Andrew. How you doing, mate?
Good. Happy New Year to you. Let's talk a bit about Mikel Arteta, because you were just out of his press conference today, Thursday, ahead of the Leeds game on Monday night in the FA Cup. He seemed a very happy man after the win against United, as you would imagine. How is his mood today in the warm glow of that victory?
Yeah, very similar. He certainly is a happy man, and quite rightly so. It was a big win for him. It was a big win for Arsenal. And, you know, we came in, well, I think we probably by the time he sat in front of us here, he was only about 14 hours after he'd sat in front of us at the stadium last night. And yeah, he's still a very, very happy man. He'd been with the players this morning, just going over a few things. And you could just, there's just a good mood around the place, isn't there? I mean, the stadium yesterday, it was really noticeable. I mean, it carried on from the Chelsea game, because although the Chelsea game ended in a bit of a horrible fashion, it was so much positivity around the club after that performance and what the players put into it, and it just carried on against United. And I thought the mood in the stadium at the end of the game, with fans staying until the end and cheering the players off, he's created an atmosphere already. And just walking into the room today, you can sense it. He's a confident guy, and he believes in what he's going to do, and the players are beginning to buy into it. And you know, myself as a fan and a journalist as well, I'm buying into it. I can see he's setting out a clear vision here. And you know, it's early days, but I think it's exciting times.
Yeah, there were some interesting little bits and pieces going on. For example, he's trained a couple of times on the Emirates pitch. Mm. Now, we saw Unai Emery do that when he first arrived, but you wondered if it was maybe more for his own benefit, you know, to get a feel for the stadium and everything else. But Arteta brought the players in on the day of the game at 8 o'clock in the morning to do a little training session. That's kind of new. And it's small little details like that when you win a game against United that people will pick on, or pick out, I should say, as something different. Bringing a change to training. It's not just London Colney, as people know, is a very comfortable place for the players, which isn't to say they don't work hard, et cetera, but, you know, to sort of change things up a bit, it probably just shakes them out of a little bit of a comfortable mindset.
I think so. I think that's the important thing. It's more of the change in the routine. I don't think they really did too much in that training session. The players didn't even get out of their tracksuit bottoms. It was more of a sort of tactical, a run through on the tactics. And I think just being in the setting of where the match is, Arteta was hoping that was going to help. And I'm not sure he's going to do it before every single game, but certainly on occasion, if he feels it can help, then he'll do that. And that's what he's going to try and do. He wants to get them out of the comfort zone that they've possibly been in, and just change things and bring a whole new mentality to the squad. And you know, Unai tried it when he went there at the start of his reign. I think that's all ended with the Ozil story that leaked out about the sort of spat that he and Ozil had, and I think they didn't train again on the pitch after that, because I don't think Unai was too keen on the lack of secrecy of what went on there. But but Arteta's certainly planning to do it on a fairly regular basis, and I think the players are, like I said, buying into it. Every time you speak to the players now, and you hear them talk, it's just, you know, they just feel what he's trying to do, and it's really encouraging. Because I was a little bit worried when he came in. I was excited he arrived, and I actually wanted the appointment, but I was a little worried about how some of the players might view him, given his age, given his, you know, lack of experience. But you know, he certainly won them over very quickly, or that's the sense you get when you speak to him or you hear them talk in different interviews.
Mm, well, I mean, the thing is, if they don't get on board with what he's doing, you know, it's not them, or it's not Arteta that's going to be leaving. You know, I think that dynamic has been made clear, and I assume he had some, you know, some assurances from the board that if he needed to make difficult decisions, he could make those difficult decisions. You know, ultimately, though, players want to win football matches, don't they? They want to enjoy themselves out on the pitch, and they want to win. And if he can make that happen for them, then they're immediately gonna like what it is that he does. I mean, what's your sense from, you know, I know it's been a very short space of time, but you know, what's your sense of how he feels the job is going for him? Because, you know, it was a couple of draws, or a draw, a defeat, and a win in his first three games in charge. So he's got the hat-trick out of the way. Do you feel like he's maybe a bit pleasantly surprised at how well the players have reacted to what he's doing?
I think he must be. I think we all are, to be honest. I'd never imagined seeing this group of players who looks totally bereft of any sort of confidence and any sort of quality, to be fair, barring a couple of individuals, to be playing like they played last night and playing how they played for the first hour against Chelsea. And the speed of which they seem to have adapted to what he's trying to do and bought into what he's trying to do, it's been really, really impressive. So I think he is. He did say today, interesting, in his press conference, that he maybe, having arrived here, he's actually realised that the challenge is bigger than he expected, which I thought was quite interesting. But because it was clearly a very big challenge, so for it to be even bigger than he expected, I thought it was quite an interesting little insight. But I think he's certainly impressed, and he talked a bit about transfers today, and Obviously, Callum Chambers' injury. Callum is having surgery right now, actually, as we speak, and they still haven't revealed the exact extent. But he just said it's a significant injury that will change transfer plans for this month. So I imagine it might be a loan. They might be looking at bringing in a loan cover that they weren't really expecting to. But he sort of expanded on that. He said his main focus is just working with the players he's got here and improving them. And that's what he wants to do. And that's what excites him. He's excited by working with the young players and getting more out of them. And that's his main focus, not signings. He said the club will try and do some business if they can in January. But his main focus is on improving what he's got to work with.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think at the start of the season, and certainly for a large part of this season, even when things were going poorly under Unai Emery, I thought to myself, look, these players are capable of better than this. They're surely not this bad. That can't be the case. You know, they've got to get it together at some point. They got to start playing. They got to start, you know, winning some games. It'll happen. And then it didn't happen. And you sort of go, well, actually, maybe the players are as bad as I thought they were, but that the mindset again has changed a bit with Arteta coming in. You look at what he's getting out of players who badly underperformed under Unai Emery. You know, Luiz just never really did it and has been very, very good in the three games that Arteta's been here. We have Socrates looking solid. Granit Xhaka is back in the fold, and I want to ask you about him now in a minute as well. Ainsley Maitland-Niles, Lucas Torreira in his best position. You know, players are Mesut Ozil, obviously. So there is the scope for improvement that maybe we didn't think was there, or that in the midst of the darkness we didn't think was possible.
No, I don't think Unai Emery helped himself at all and helped Arsenal's cause at all with some of his decisions. So, I mean, the Lucas Torreira situation was totally ridiculous, and he's being made to look more ridiculous by the week now. He's back playing in where he should have been playing, and the performances that he's putting in, how important he's been in the team's performance as well by playing there. I mean, I will never understand what Emery was trying to do with Torreira.
No.
And moving him out of that position and basically leaving Granit Xhaka to be like a lamb to the slaughter in a role that he couldn't do. And that had such a massive effect on the team. The amount of shots they were conceding on a regular, you know, game by game was down to the midfield setup, and that was totally down to Emery and the formation he was trying to play. And so I don't think he helped at all, but I do agree. At some point you did start to think, God, are the players actually this bad? And because the results kept going the wrong way. But I do think that Emery has to take an awful lot of the blame for what happened at Arsenal. He simply wasn't good enough. He lost his way. He confused himself, and Arsenal, you know, suffered because of that. So it just feels like the gloom has been lifted. I mean, listen to Socrates after the game last night. He says the fun is back. You know, David Luiz saying that he'd rather sleep happy for 4 hours than sad for 8 hours. This was not a happy training base, but it's by the end of Unai Emery. I remember being here for the training session before the Frankfurt game when he eventually was sacked the day after, and it was like a morgue. It was depressing to watch just how low it was around here, and that's all been lifted now by the decision and Arteta coming in and the players buying into his ideas.
You know, things are, you know, on the up when Socrates is smiling, so we haven't seen too much of that from him, and understandably so. I mean, just playing devil's advocate a bit though, you know, people will say, well, these are the same players, they're clearly capable of much better, could they not have put in more of a shift under Emery? And I'm sort of, you know, erring on the side that you're coming at this from, because I do think, you know, he created the atmosphere and created the environment in which he was ultimately sacked. But throughout, you know, I did see a lot of people say, well, look, you know, you can't just talk about the coach, you've got to put some of this on the players.
Yeah, I mean, some of the players do have to take the shoulder of blame, but I do think if you're in a working environment, whatever industry you're in, that is just, you just turn up to every day and you're like, oh, you know, you're not excited by it, you're not inspired by it, then you're not gonna perform at the top of your level. And I mean, like I said, I mentioned the Torreira situation. He's not, you know, he still worked hard, didn't he? Every single game, he tried his best, but he was just playing in a role that didn't suit him. And the same with Mesut Ozil. You know, Ozil to get the best out of Ozil, you need to set a team up around him. And Arteta's doing that, and he said it openly that he plans to do that. And to, he wants to focus more on Ozil's strengths than his weaknesses. But it was an opposite with the Emery, wasn't it? The focus was always on Ozil's weaknesses rather than his strengths. And you're not, if you're playing under a coach who's constantly focusing on your weaknesses, you're just not going to play to the top of your level, because your morale's going to be low. And I'm clearly not Unai Emery's biggest fan. I was very public in that during the last few months of his reign, and I can't believe now, sitting here, that they didn't make the decision at least 2 months earlier. It was they should have done. They've wasted a season by sticking with him.
Yeah, look, I know it's probably a discussion for another day, and it's water under the bridge. Who knows how expensive that water might prove to be, you know, in terms of European qualification, certainly. And I don't necessarily want to get into this now, because we're all feeling quite good about what's gone on against United, and I think we should try and maintain that feel-good factor as long as possible. But, you know, there are people who make decisions, footballing decisions at the football club, who should be feeling a little bit of pressure because of where we are right now. You know, at executive level, the guy who's basically responsible for football, the head of football, should be feeling a little bit uncomfortable, you know, based on the position that Arsenal are in. Mitigated by the arrival of Mikel Arteta, and we all feel quite good about that. But, you know, look at where we were when he took over, and look how long it's taken to sort of change the trajectory of this fall that we were on. So maybe we can talk about that another day. But I do want to talk to you about Granit Xhaka, who was brought back into the side. He played very, very well, I think, against Manchester United. The sort of game we know he's capable of having, but too often those performances are punctuated by mistakes or issues or cards that get people on his back. Arteta's been very clear about how much he thinks of Xhaka as a footballer. I think he called him a tremendous footballer, and did talk about how he maybe wanted to sign him for Manchester City, or he was somebody that Man City were looking at before he joined Arsenal. You know, a few weeks ago, it felt really unlikely that there could be a redemption for Xhaka. And if Arteta maybe was looking to play to the crowd, he could use the Xhaka situation in his favour in a way, because he hasn't been the most popular player. But he's, again, sort of sticking his neck out here, making a decision which isn't going to be popular with a lot of people. You know, he's got his fans, Xhaka, but he's also got his critics. And after everything that went on, you know, it was all a bit up in the air. But he's very clear about what he wants from Granit Xhaka, and he's backing him very publicly.
He is, yeah, and he did it again today. Actually, he spoke really well again about Granit and the whole situation, and how he wanted to get to the root sort of cause of it all when he arrived here and sat down with Granit, and you know, really tried to work out why how it had reached this stage and why he was feeling like he had to move on to carry on his career. And again, reiterated how much he wanted to keep him, and that, again, like he said yesterday, that Xhaka has given him assurances that he will stay. And I think it's a good move for Arsenal. I mean, I'm not massively in the Granit Xhaka fan club, but I do think he is very important to this Arsenal team. And when he plays well, Arsenal play well. And playing alongside Torreira, but slightly in an advanced role of Torreira. He's a very good player. He showed that last season before Emery inexplicably, you know, swapped him round, and he played really well against United. And what he brings to the team, no one else can do. So when Xhaka's not available, you really see how much Arsenal miss him. And like I said, if he's playing well, he makes Arsenal tick, and he played very well against United. And shown really good leadership. And for someone so young and inexperienced as well, this was a really difficult situation to walk into. And he's handled it very, very well. He's got Xhaka back on side. He saved Arsenal a real issue in terms of the January transfer window. Because if Xhaka had walked out now, like he would have done if Emery was still in charge, then it's like, how do you replace him in January for such an important position? I don't think Arsenal would have been able to. So they would have been far weaker. But now they at least get to the end of the season when you've got more of a chance to, if Xhaka does go, they can get in a proper replacement who they actually plan long term for, rather than a bit of a just a crisis signing they've had to do because of something that's been thrust upon them 6 weeks before the window.
Sure.
So I think he's handled the situation really, really well. And Xhaka is an emotional guy as well. It's not easy to sit down with Granit Xhaka and talk about something like this and to get him back on side. So for Arteta to walk straight into it and to do it, and probably not have to just do it with Xhaka, but his dad as well, it's not the easiest of thing for a coach to do, and he seems to have done it and done it successfully, and credit to him for that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing as well is that it also allows you to perhaps sell him properly in the summer, you know, to work out time for him to go to whatever club he might want to go to. If he is going to go in the summer, maybe Hertha Berlin will still want him then, but you know, he may have other options.
They need to sort the money out though, because all the money that was being mentioned for Xhaka was given, despite the situation, was ridiculous, really. 21 million or something for an international captain who's just signed a new contract. You know, given today's market, there's no way Arsenal could even consider doing business for that, even though everything's gone on. So yeah, I fully agree with that. I think if he does go in the summer, then at least now they have an opportunity for the dust to settle and then to, you know, really work on getting the best deal possible for the club.
Mm. Just very finally, let's talk about the FA Cup game on Monday night against Leeds United. It's been a punishing recent schedule. There are going to be some very heavy legs. There are going to be some little aches and strains and niggles and what have you. What way is he going to approach this? I know that the cup is a chance of silverware, and Arteta, you know, has experienced that as an Arsenal player. He knows well what it's like to win the FA Cup, and those are great days. But how is he going to balance his squad, which is, you know, it's a bit thin at the moment. There are injuries. There are players just coming back from injury. There are players carrying some injuries. What has he said about how he wants to approach this game, and has he hinted at any sort of squad management?
I think there'll certainly be squad management. He did say that, you know, the FA Cup is a competition that Arsenal have to try and win and be competitive in. So I don't think he's going to go out there and field 11 kids, but I think you're going to see changes. You know, maybe if Bellerin's back remotely up to speed, he could come in and right back, and I wouldn't be surprised to see possibly Boller playing at left back, someone like that. He's been training a lot with the first team. He was even on the pitch on that for that session before the Man United game, on the morning of the Man United game. He was involved in that. You know, I wonder if it's time to give Saka, well, it is certainly time to give Saka a rest, I think. And Kolasinac clearly limped through the pain yesterday. So
yeah,
I think at left back, you can't take any risks at the moment. So I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe a youngster like Boller thrown in there. But other than that, I think he'll mix and match. He'll play, you know, Guendouzi will come in. I think Rob Holding will play against alongside one of the two experienced centre-backs in Luiz or Socrates. And, you know, then you've got Nelson, Martinelli. So I think he'll approach it like he wants to win the game. He's certainly not going to go out there and throw this one, far from it. I mean, there's no point because the Premier League's already gone, isn't it, this season? So you've only got two competitions to focus on, really, at the moment. So he'll approach it in a way that to try and win it. But I don't think, he'll certainly use squad management. I don't think he's got any other option.
Yeah, a bit of a balancing act, in fairness. I mean, there's Danny Ceballos there, Mavropanos has been on the bench, of course, the last couple of weeks. So maybe a chance to see some of these players, because for all the work they do on the training ground, match day is when you can really get a good sense of, you know, what these players can produce. But look, we better leave it there. Thanks a million, Charles. We'll talk to you again soon.
Cheers, Andrew.
You can find Charles on Twitter at Charles_Watts. That is at Charles_Watts. And of course, he writes about Arsenal for goal.com. I don't know what else to say other than I hope your new year is going well. I hope your new year's resolutions are working out for you. Mine are really simple. I'm going to do some stuff and I'm going to not do some other stuff. That's it. You know, it's quite broad, I realize. It's a bit sweeping. It's kind of all-encompassing. But, you know, if you get too specific about things these days, you get pigeonholed. Don't want to be stereotyped as the guy who said, well, I'm going to do this for the new year, and then you don't do it. People won't let you forget that these days. So whatever you're doing for the new year, I hope you do it well. Arsenal don't play until Monday evening, of course, so it's an Arsenal-free weekend. And then we've got FA Cup action against Leeds ahead of Crystal Palace in the Premier League next week. But still, plenty going on. Lots to keep us interested over the weekend. So make sure you check out Arsblog, Arsblog News. I should just say to people who use the Arsblog apps and who are regular Arsblog News readers, we do know that there's a bit of a problem at the moment. When things get busy, the site becomes a bit slow to respond. We're working on it. We are doing our best, and hopefully we'll have a solution in place as quickly as possible. But apologies for the inconvenience, because I know how frustrating it is, and it's frustrating for us as well, trust me. But we are hoping to get on top of that very soon, in the next couple of days anyway, or certainly by early next week. Yeah, that's it. I don't know what else to say other than have a great weekend. Enjoy the fact we've won a game at last. I feel like we should have been doing a lot more of this, because it's a lot more fun than not doing it. But it is what it is. Have a great weekend. James and I will be here on Tuesday, because the game is on Monday night, so we will be recording an Arscast Extra on Tuesday about the Leeds game and, you know, all the bits and pieces that have gone on between now and then. So thank you as ever for listening, subscribing, sharing, and doing all the stuff that you do. Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Hey, Josh. It's me, your dad, Stan.
Oh, hey, Dad. How's it going?
Not great, J-boy. That new stadium is going to cost another $72 billion to build.
Wow. Good news from over here, though, Dad. We got a new manager for Arsenal.
What's an Arsenal?
You know, that team in London.
What's a London?
Oh, you're so funny, Dad. But it's so great. Remember the last guy? He was good. His name was Arsene, like Arsenal.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Well, this guy's also got the R thing going. He's called Artisanal Coffee.
Hang up the phone, Josh. I've warned you about that shit before.
Oh.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.